Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. There are many reasons an individual or family experiences homelessness. In our region, the high cost of housing is a huge factor. Behavioral health challenges, substance use disorder, and stable, good-paying jobs can add to the list. Today, we discuss national and regional program models that are successful in keeping people in stable housing. And in light of a new presidential administration that holds the purse strings for funding homelessness programs, what homelessness programs are in jeopardy of funding cuts? A little later in the hour, we'll talk with local housing advocates about programs to get chronically homeless individuals into stable housing. But first, we welcome Philip Mangano back to the show. Philip is the president and CEO of the American Roundtable to Abolish Homelessness. He was a former national homelessness policy czar under both Presidents George Bush and Barack Obama. Philip, welcome back to the program.
So glad to join with you again, Mindy, though it's never for terribly good reasons, unfortunately. We'll have to have a show which is just all about positive things.
Yeah, well, someday we're going to be doing
that.
Yeah. All right, so Philip, you served under both Republican and Democratic presidential administrations. And historically, meaning before 2016, was there a difference in how Republicans and Democrats approached homelessness and viewed the role of government and possible solutions?
I think what marked the efforts from the early 2000s up until the mid to 2016, which you mentioned, was a bipartisan approach. Neither side felt that they had all of the answers. We mined each side to make sure that the best ideas were implemented in our country. But the general approach was, this is a nonpartisan, there's no D, there's no R on homelessness. We're just Americans attempting to solve a national problem. Mm.
Did the first Trump administration follow the typical Republican philosophy towards homelessness and the role of the federal government, or was it an outlier?
Well, what was interesting, of course, was that we were attempting to ensure that they would stay within the guidelines of what had been established because things were starting to work. And they were starting to meander a bit. But, of course, COVID hit, and all of their attention related to homelessness was rightfully focused on saving the lives of homeless people. So their folk were on the front lines of ensuring that homeless people got into hotel and motel rooms that would isolate them, that the vaccine was available in general. So most homelessness policy during the second half of the first Trump term actually focused on saving lives and the COVID crisis. So we didn't see the kinds of policy aberrations that we're starting to see now.
Mm. And before we get to that, how would you describe the Biden administration's philosophy toward homelessness and the role of government in finding solutions?
I think they were, you know, consumed with lots of things, and there was a lot more emphasis on process, frankly, than performance under President Biden. After all, what we learned was that the numbers of homeless people in our country went to the highest levels ever recorded. So unfortunately, I think because they were more focused on other kinds of issues related to homelessness, they kind of took their eye off the ball of the most important thing, which I think is performance and outcomes being quantifiable, and the key metric being that you're reducing the number of our neighbors who are suffering from homelessness. I think they tried to keep, though, within the idea of a bipartisan approach as much as they could.
Mm. We're now into the second Trump administration, and last month you wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about changes happening at the federal level impacting homelessness programming. Tell us more.
Well, unfortunately, what precipitated that op-ed piece in the Times was an executive order that the president issued that wasn't entirely a bad effort. It called on more resources to be coming out of the substance abuse and mental health system for homeless people. That would be a very good thing. But the general focus of it, I would say it was back to the past. not back to a future, but back to the past, back to what hadn't worked in the past in terms of an approach that prioritized putting services into the lives of homeless people when they were still out there kind of randomly ricocheting across a variety of different systems, whether it was the primary care system in a hospital or the acute side of substance abuse and mental health programs, often seen in courts and incarceration. There was just this constant rotation of people. People were shuffled from one place to another. And that, unfortunately, will be the result of some of the changes that are being called for. Now, these changes haven't yet taken place. Ironically, the shutdown precluded their new funding effort, which would be the sign of the direction that they're going. That hasn't been issued yet. So some of us are trying to do everything we can before the government is back in session to push back a little bit on the direction that they want to go. But in general, it's more of a services first approach rather than a housing first approach.
And so you're working to bring together the Housing First Camp and the Services for First Camp, essentially to plan and fund programs that get people into housing and provide services. First, you know, what examples are there of programs that are already doing this? And what's been the success rate of keeping people in stable housing?
Well, one of the things that we learned from the best federal program that was ever created, it's called HUD-VASH. And underneath those initials, what it means is that the Department of Housing and Urban Development issued vouchers, housing vouchers that would pay the rent. And this is targeted to veterans. Veterans would have to pay a third of their income, but the rest of it would be paid by the federal government. So HUD was issuing a voucher, and then the VASH part means that the VA was providing support services to support people in the housing. This was a program that was created way back under the first Bush administration by the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development back then, and it worked, and it works, and it works because it provides the antidote to homelessness, namely a place to live, and we know for very vulnerable people, it provides services to support them. So it had an amazing result for homeless veterans. We were able to halve the number. Half of the veterans who were once homeless are no longer homeless, and that number continues to be driven down through that intervention. Then that idea became a template for all the rest of homeless people. And the best way of talking about that is in Housing First, which was an initiative that was created in New York a number of years ago. The idea being that what homeless people most needed was a place to live. And when you talk to homeless people, they said that was the thing that they most wanted. So it was consumer friendly, but also corresponded to the success that the HUD-VASH program had. So policy and investments turned from an emphasis on services, servicing people endlessly, really, it turned to ending their homelessness by providing them with a place to live. And what we know is that not only did it work for veterans, but all across our country, whether you're in Boston or you're in San Francisco, the Housing First initiative made the difference. It made it possible to move people off the street into housing. The difficulty, a little bit of the difficulty, has been that some programs, recognizing that Housing First was the direction that funding was going, they began to call themselves Housing First, even though they weren't doing Housing First. So they put people in housing and they didn't provide the services necessary to support the tenancies. So in some places, Housing First got a bad name. Some people picked up on, hey, this was a Housing First program, and the people all dropped out back to the street. But in a program that has fidelity to the actual Housing First principles, you house the person, and then you literally customize services to support them. So if they have an addiction issue, you're customizing the kind of interventions. If they have mental health issues, you're customizing mental health services. If it's just an employment issue, you're doing that. So all of it is very customized in the Housing First. The customer is kind of leading the way in terms of what they need, and then the response is made to target their stability in housing.
Yeah, makes sense, right? I mean, that's what you're saying. It just sounds like common sense. But when you look at the heads of HUD and Health and Human Services in the Trump administration, how likely is it that they might strategize and work together on homelessness?
Well, what was so amazing, Mindy, was that the executive order that the president issued on safe streets had a lot to do with homelessness. And in that executive order, there, if you read it carefully, a lot of people, I think, just reacted to it. It's Trump on homelessness. It can't be good. But actually, when you read in that executive order, the president called for an increase in a prioritization of things like mental health and substance abuse services for homeless people. And it specifically calls out Secretary Kennedy to ensure that that happens. I have a certain belief in Secretary Kennedy, that he will be very amenable to that provision of increased services. Because where we've been is that HUD, that is the Housing and Urban Development Department, has provided most of the federal resources on homelessness. We made sure that those resources were targeted primarily to housing. That's what HUD should be doing. They should be doing housing. But there was never a corresponding focus from HHS, Health and Human Services, on the services necessary to support those tendencies. Exactly what you just indicated was common sense. It is common sense. It makes sense. It also makes dollars and sense because we know chronic homeless people randomly ricocheting in a variety of very expensive systems in our community, corrections and judges and juries and the emergency room of hospitals often taken by ambulance. They're very expensive. So it makes common sense and dollars and cents. So what the possibility is that if we can sustain the housing first attention, that is a priority on creating housing. And this administration is no friend to that. But that's what we have to do. We have to preserve that and then add to it the additional services that are called for from the EO. We finally have a federal policy that takes the qualitative difference that and quantitative difference that HUD-DASH made in terms of reducing the number of homeless veterans. We now have that applied to the general population. So that's what we're attempting to do. That's why I've convened the people who are the stalwarts on Housing First. And they feel that housing, they have a dogma and an orthodoxy about Housing First, that that's the way we should go. And then I've convened them with kind of the missions mentality, which is focused on services. It's not a bad thing. They do a great job, actually, around people who have substance abuse issues. The idea is to bring these services first missions, and there are 320 of them combined in something called CityGate, together with the Housing First people. So you have the services and housing brought together, and that their joint advocacy, rather than being polarized, thinking the resources should go one way or the other, the idea is to bring them together so that at the federal level, there's an understanding we need to provide housing with services. That's what works.
We're talking about programs to end homelessness this hour. Coming up after a break, we'll expand the conversation to hear about local supports and programs for those without shelter. Stay with us. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about strategies to get people into stable housing and provide the supports and services that will keep them housed. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Philip Mangano. He's president and CEO of the American Roundtable to Abolish Homelessness. Also joining us, Laura Russo, director of shelter services for Catholic Charities. They run St. Joseph's Shelter in Hyannis. Welcome back, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me.
Terry Barron is a program officer of the Homeless Prevention Council. Welcome back to you, Terry.
Thank you. Good morning.
And also with us, Tim Regan. He's assistant director of individual homeless services at Housing Assistance Corporation. Welcome, Tim.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So I guess give us a sense of how many people are unhoused in our region and how that number has changed recently. Tim, let's start with you.
Sure. So we use different metrics to measure that. Usually it's the Housing Urban Development's PIT count, which is conducted once in January. And that number usually hovers somewhere around 300 to 350 or so. Our organization tracks that and the individuals that we work with internally on our homeless outreach team. This year, our number is somewhere north of 500,
wow,
which has been a substantial increase over the last few years. So 2025 has seen a big increase in number of individuals entering homelessness this year.
Yeah. Laura, what are you saying?
So for many that don't know, our shelter, we are contracted for 50 clients here, 30 men, 20 women. So we're seeing an uptick as far as our wait list. Mm-hmm. Growing, we probably have 60, 70 male on the male wait list. The women's is a little bit shorter. And the number of phone calls that we are receiving as far as homelessness and those individuals actually just showing up here, and predominantly most are from the Cape, mm-hmm, who are now homeless. So we are seeing an uptick in those numbers as well here at the shelter.
And Terry, you work with prevention. I imagine you're also seeing an uptick in people reaching out for help, right?
Oh, absolutely. We had a 24% increase in our clients last year.
Wow. Philip, is that what we're kind of seeing around the country?
Sadly, it is. And actually, if it's all right, I'd like to ask a question of the other guests. And that is based on, there are researchers who are calling the substantial increase that we've seen in homelessness in the last couple of years, they've called it the migrant bump. And what they mean by that is that a number of migrants work their way into the homelessness system, and that's to a large degree, one of the reasons there was such a substantial increase. And what the researchers tell us is that there were four places where that took place in a very egregious way. It was New York City, Chicago, Denver, and ironically, Massachusetts, where the Massachusetts, I think we all know the homelessness budget for families went from $200 million to $400 million. I'm wondering if that's part of what we're seeing on the Cape in terms of those substantial increases. When I hear Tim talk about a number that historically, I know this number, usually 325, 350, went to 500, and we're seeing more families. Is there some kind, maybe it's not the migrant folk themselves, but is there some kind of connection between the quote-unquote migrant bump and the increases that we've seen on the Cape?
Tim, what do you think?
Just from the data that my team collects and the folks we meet, there is a loose connection, but the primary factor of the reason why our numbers are increasing has been due to just income and lack of inventory. Mm-hmm. So while there may be some connection to the migrant bump, the primary factors are just the inventory alone.
Yeah. Anybody want to add anything to that?
So what we have here at the shelter, I will say probably over 90% of our clients coming in and out of the shelter have direct ties to the Cape. I'm not seeing, as Tim talked about, the migrant, and it does go back to income and inventory. A lot of folks, as an example, yesterday, a couple showed up and said they were evicted. So we're seeing it related back to the inventory and income level. as what Tim was talking about.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Terry?
Sure. Yeah, we're seeing the same in terms of clients that are coming to us. It's all about lack of inventory and also just overall pricing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who are earning even a decent wage are having trouble living on the Cape. Yeah. And so the other part of that is that, you know, rentals are being sold out from under folks. And so it's just adding to the crisis.
Yeah. And that just the high cost of whether, you know, the rent, first of all, you can hardly find any rents, right? And then when you do, it's just amazing the prices, right?
Yes, we're seeing one bedrooms that are going from $1,800 to $2,500.
I was going to say, this has been several years now, but maybe 10 years ago or so, I was helping my daughter find an apartment, and she had about $1,000 a month in her budget. And I will tell you, some of the places we were looking at, I wouldn't let my dog live there, right? I mean, it was amazing, and it's only gotten worse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. If I could interject one thing that during seasonal, probably over 40% of our clients here in the shelter, they're employed.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about these folks not being unemployed. They are employed. And right now we're probably at 35% of our clients here at the shelter are employed. But as we talked about, the amount of cost for housing here.
Yeah, they're employed, and a lot more families, right? I mean, Terry, you're seeing more families reach out, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes. We have people who are they're cramming into one-bedroom apartments because they can't find or afford anything else. I mean, even something simple as our backpack program, you know, we had a 34% increase in that this year where folks just needed help paying for school supplies for their children.
Yeah. So I wonder if each of you could talk about the services and supports that you offer to unhoused people in our region. Tim, let's start with you.
Sure. So we hit it on many different levels. My department in particular runs two different programs. We run the homeless outreach aspect, which is a street outreach. Our workers go out and meet with folks wherever they are, in their woods, in the cars, in the communities, anywhere that they may congregate or be engaged with them, work with them, try and get them into housing. The second aspect of that is our permanent supportive housing programs. These are programs funded by the McKinley-Vento Act from the 1980s and follow that housing first strategy we were talking about earlier, where we find folks that are homeless who are chronic. That means they were homeless for up to a year and disabled, get them into housing, and then follow them with case management. We offer about 80-something slots a unit of that. We primarily funded through the Barnstable County COC. But we also offer 29 units owned by HAC that are dedicated specifically for individuals that are experiencing homelessness or are entering homelessness. As an agency, we're also working on just increasing the amount of inventory on Cape Cod by repurposing land and buildings that we own or things like that. Like a good example is our recent development over on 107 Main Street in Orleans there in the Government Prince in Orleans. We're using that land to make housing more attainable for folks that, as Laura was suggesting, folks that aren't in homelessness that have good incomes that are working, but they just can't afford it.
Right, Laura. What about you? Tell about your services.
Sure. So, for many of you that don't know, our mission statement here is to embrace every individual with dignity, fostering empowerment, resilience, and opportunity and hope. And what we do here is, yes, we are an emergency shelter, but we do have case management here, which provides the clients with housing search, providing essential documentation, security, social security card, birth certificate, IDs. And one of the main focuses here, one, keeping them safe, but also providing that stabilization, which again, we are able to work with Tim, because what we've really been able to do here at the shelter is really build those cross-sectional partnerships with HAC, with Duffy, with Benfin and other agencies, because we utilize the housing first model. So not only do our clients here have case management here, they have case management with HAC and other agencies on the Cape, that provides those wraparound services as, to get them housed. It is no easy solution, as they say. It's very incredibly complex. Each individual brings their own issues that each client needing different wraparound services. So I would say the main focus here is one is us providing that stabilization and then working with all the entities on the Cape to get them housed.
Mm. Terry, talk about what your services are.
Sure. So at Homeless Prevention Council, we really focus on prevention. And our main goal is to keep people stably housed and financially secure. So our case managers will work with folks who come in that are either at risk of losing their homes or, you know, they just can't afford their homes and they need some financial help. So we will dig in and help them do budgeting, and we'll help find them financial resources with other agencies on the Cape. We'll get them on housing lists and, you know, help them with a variety of housing applications, things like that. We also have a youth and young adult program that does case management and outreach Cape and Islands wide. And so we are trying to find homes for these youth and young adults. There's a host homes program that is part of that, where folks can offer up a room in their home for 6 to 12 months, and we're trying to grow that program. So we are all about really trying to keep people housed.
Yeah, and we should point out again, Philip said this in the first segment, it is more cost effective to keep people housed, right? Everybody's shaking their heads, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And Philip, this is true no matter where you are in the country, right?
Right. It's actually one of the arguments that helped mayors understand the issue of homelessness in a way that they hadn't ever before. When you have them understand that the costliness of a person doing that, as I mentioned earlier, that random ricocheting through very expensive systems. If you need primary health care, you go in an ambulance to the emergency room. You can't get your health care any more expensively than that. If you have behavioral health problems, you go to the acute side of behavioral health. You can't do it more expensively. Sometimes you end up in a court. Sometimes you end up incarcerated. When you add all of that up, it's more expensive than literally providing a person with a place to live and the services that they need to support their tenancies. I would like to ask a question, though, in terms, if it's all right with you, Mindy.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
One of the things that's happening, and this is to your guess. One of the things that's happening around the country, I've talked about it on the show years ago, and it's still going on, and that is the conversion of hotels and motels to housing, especially targeted to people who are individuals, homeless individuals, chronic homeless people. In fact, later this afternoon, I'm off to North Carolina to talk to a housing authority there and some people in Raleigh, North Carolina, about the conversion of a 139-unit motel that was like a long-term stay place. So they all have kitchenettes, they all have bathrooms. So they would qualify for a HUD voucher so people could have their homelessness ended in kind of a starter unit like that. I'm wondering if that's caught on here on the Cape at all. I see motels being converted. I'm not sure what they're being converted to, but in some places, for example, in Raleigh, that 139 units, that will house about one third of all of the chronic homeless people in Raleigh and Wake County there. So the idea of doing large sites, which gets right to the issue of inventory. We want to talk about inventory. No community in the country has sufficient units that are targeted to homeless people. So we have to be creative in terms of our approach, in terms of creating those units. The conversion of hotels and motels tends to be a much more cost-effective way of getting units up, and they can be considered as starter units. People get stable in them. They have their privacy, they have a lockable door, they have a kitchenette, they have a bathroom. So I'm just wondering if on the Cape that's become part of the selection of solutions.
Anybody know? Have anybody heard of that happening? Tim, do you know anything about that? Oh, I think Tim is frozen again. Maybe, Dan, we get Tim on the phone. And Terry, you have not heard of that, right?
I have not. I mean, I've seen properties being converted, but I don't know the answer.
I just think there's an opportunity on the Cape. There seems to be some turnover in hotels and motels as I drive around the Cape. When I'm here, I do see motels that are for sale. And what we've discovered literally all over this country, you may not see signs that motels are for sale, but invariably in every community I've traveled to, and that's a lot of communities, there are hotels and motels that would be available for sale and are subject to conversion. And I just think if inventory, what I heard was it's not so much this, what the researchers called the migrant bump so much in the Cape. I think that's much more probably in Boston and certainly in those other cities. But it sounds like an inventory issue. And if it's inventory, there's no quicker way to get inventory up than the conversion of a hotel or a motel. So,
Tim, do you know anything about that on the Cape of converting motels and hotels?
Yeah, it's something that we actually are doing within housing assistance. We actually had a building that we were using for different purposes that was set up like a hotel motel. And that's one of the units I had talked about. It's an 18 unit facility that mixes single room occupancy and studio that is targeted for folks that you have to be literally homeless in order to qualify for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tim, we hear stories of people who are really uncomfortable going into shelters or even considering.
So we are doing something like that with them.
Yeah. So Tim, the people who are really uncomfortable going into shelters or even considering permanent housing options. And I know you and your outreach program, you reach out to these. Some of them have just been outside so long, they're just really uncomfortable being indoors. So what approach do you use to try and help them become more comfortable with going back inside?
That's difficult. You have to really base it case by case. You know, a lot of people are off put by staying in a shelter. A lot of people welcome that idea. A lot of people don't want to live with other folks. A lot of people just want places on their own. It's really individualizing the service and then recognizing the barriers that are in front of that person to find that solution. One of the things that we want to do as an organization is make the individual shelter more tailored towards folks that are off put by that. That is a long-term plan that we're tackling. But that is a struggle that we hit on a day-to-day basis, and we have to individualize the solution.
All right. We are talking about strategies to get people into stable housing and provide the supports and services that will keep them housed. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about strategies to get people into stable housing and provide the supports and services that will keep them housed. With us is Philip Mangano, President and CEO of the American Roundtable to Abolish Homelessness. Laura Russo is Director of Shelter Services for Catholic Charities. They run St. Joseph's Shelter in Hyannis. Terry Barron's a Program Officer of the Homeless Prevention Council. And Tim Regan is Assistant Director of Individual Homeless Services at Housing Assistance Corporation. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Housing and social service programs require funding. If we're to provide both at the same time, does that mean we need to expand funding, or are there ways for housing and social service programs to collaborate? And I know there's a lot of collaboration going on. So, Tim, let's start with you. How do we tackle that funding question?
Not easy answer, but on.
All right, Tim, we're having a little problem with Tim's audio, I think, on Zoom. So
let's. We just need to develop a little bit more into it.
Let's talk, Laura. Tell us a little about collaborations when we get Tim's audio fixed.
Sure. So, like I talked about, we really use that cross-sectional partnership on the Cape, especially with HAP, with Duffy, in order to provide our services. I know that as far as we could not do it alone without the partnerships that we have created as far as the funding and such. I know that when we do get folks housed in, let's say they're getting their studio or their one-bedroom apartment, You know, we like to set our folks up for success. So we do provide them the first, last, and security. We make sure they have all the essentials once they are into their own unit to succeed. And then, as we talked about with Housing First, making sure the case management and those wraparound services are in order. As far as the direct funding and such, that would be a question that would probably go to my CEO for that question, Susan Mozzarella, regarding the funding aspect.
All right, Tim, let's try it again, see if we got
I think in terms of a funding way to tackle this, we really just need to increase the inventory by not so much building, but just repurposing, you know, properties and lands that we're already doing. Because what we see is a lot of times we have folks that are able to get in, you know, have stable incomes, but they just don't have a place to go. So I think if we expand that way, we can increase funding towards the amount of properties they can repurpose. We can actually, you know, take a big bite out of this problem.
Yeah. What about you, Terry?
I think we look at it from a little bit of a different aspect in terms of the services that we help provide for people. I mean, one of the things we focus on mostly is trying to help our clients reduce their monthly costs because everything is so expensive. And, you know, we're one of two certified SNAP partners on the Cape. And so we know what's happening with SNAP right now. Mm-hmm. So what happens if, you know, those funds don't come back right away? Or what happens, you know, if fuel assistance isn't available or things like that? And so we are trying to figure out how do we help, along with our community partners, you know, how do we help these clients who are reliant on some of these funds? Yeah. And so I think we're looking at that quite a bit.
Yeah. One of the things as we mentioned before, and it's worth mentioning again, prevention is more cost effective than trying to, you know, house somebody. So what does that cost? Sometimes it's just a one-time thing, right? Sometimes you're helping a family budget and that's all they need. Sometimes it's they need a mortgage payment, right? So what is that cost? I know it varies family to family, but it's not as much as people would think.
Oh, it's definitely not as much as people think. Sure. I mean, you know, sometimes people are actually lucky enough to find housing, but they don't have the cash to put down first, last, and security. And so, you know, we'll help them get that. Or, again, they're behind on a utility bill. And so, you know, but we also want to make sure that if somebody's behind on a utility bill, there may be more going on behind the scenes. Right. So let's not do a one-time payment and then send them out the door. Let's work with them and make sure that, you know, there's long-term success and long-term stability. And so, yes, it doesn't cost a ton of money to help stabilize these folks. We can help get them signed up for services they may not even know that they were eligible for, rental assistance or fuel assistance or things like that. And with, you know, with the local area median income, a lot of folks are eligible for these services, but they think they make too much money. So until we can actually explain to them that we can help them reduce their costs and make their monthly living expenses more manageable, you know, they're just out there trying to make ends meet every day.
Yeah. I mean, we know what's happening, as you mentioned, with SNAP benefits. You mentioned fuel assistance. Are we going to see cuts to fuel assistance?
We don't know yet. We're keeping a close eye on it. Yeah. So what I understand is that the funds are normally renewed around this time. We haven't seen that yet. There are still some funds available from last year, but we're waiting to see if they're going to be available for this winter. Yeah. Because if not, it's going to put people in a world of hurt.
Right. So there might be instances when we encounter someone who appears to have challenges finding shelter. What do we do in those instances, Tim? Is Tim there? All right. Well, I'll start with you, Laura. Somebody, you mentioned a wait list. You got people who are looking for shelter. How do we help them? What do we do?
So probably one of the biggest issues we have is that if they are from the Cape, they don't want to leave the Cape. That's
right.
Been a problem. So because we do have other shelters within our diocese, located in Taunton, New Bedford, Attleboro, we do provide them, if they have open beds, transporting them to another alternative shelter. Another thing that we like to do is the biggest thing of people coming into shelter and such is, you know, trying to build that communication and that rapport with them. finding out about family. Where is your family? Finding those connections. We are at times able to provide them transportation, whether out of state or in state, to reunite with family, to provide that reunification. Again, I think when we look at the individuals who are coming in, we look at, you know, are they disabled? Are they a veteran? Just kind of asking some of those questions to help us figure out what avenue is best for them. Are they connected, you know, with DMH, mental health services? And that's really where we have to reach out across all the partners. And a lot of times they are already have case management. So it's just reconnecting them with the case management. And again, it goes back to the shelter providing that stabilization and getting them the services that they need. But it is very difficult. I will tell you the hard, one of the most difficult things is when we get people come here and we don't have a bed.
Yeah, it's hard to say, got to turn them away. Yeah.
So, but just to move forward, but November 15th, just so put this out there that we will be starting our overflow program for the winter. So that will start November 15th, and that will be on a first-come, first-serve with an additional 18 beds. So that will also help out this winter.
Yeah. So, Tim, do you think sometimes it's just a question of maybe people not even realizing what services are out there for them?
Oh, absolutely. One of the biggest things that our team does is get the word out to services, because a lot of folks will come to us and say, I've been homeless for 2 or 3 years. I didn't even know you guys existed, or I didn't know that even existed. So we need to get the word out ASAP, and that's what our team does on a daily basis.
Yeah. Philip, I wanted to chime in a little bit here. We're talking about collaborations. It seems nowadays, if with funding what it is, you have to have partners to collaborate with, right?
Oh, there's no question about it. And I certainly think that's one of the hallmarks of the CAPES response to homelessness. We're hearing it from your guests that there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of cooperation, a lot of communication, which is the basis of it. On the local level, that's so important. On the larger level, there are silos which give out the money. So HUD gives out the housing money, HHS gives out service money. And part of the work that needs to be done at the federal level is to do more of a connection between those housing resources and the service resources. And that's part of the work with the Housing First and the missions people, to bring them together so that their voice is a unified voice, that we need both housing and services, and we need them in a coordinated fashion. When I was in Washington, we did the first ever RFP, a request for proposal, that included both HUD monies for housing, HHS monies for services, and VA money, Veterans Affairs money, for help specifically for veterans. So it was, you applied into this one effort, and you got money to do housing, services, and to help veterans. That was a unicorn in the federal thing. The federal civil servants hated it because it was more work, but that's the way resources should be available to, whether it's the Cape or larger cities, where you apply to one source to get what you need to house people and to provide the services to support their tenancies. And ultimately, that is our work. It is to abolish homelessness. It is to do away with this. The metric that we want is the number of homeless people in our community decreasing. And so there's certainly more work that needs to be done in the Cape when we hear that the numbers have gone up on the family side and the individual side. Collaboration is an important part of it, but sometimes that collaboration needs to be encouraged by how the money comes from Washington.
Yeah. So, Phil, what will you be looking for at the federal level in the next few months and into this next year as a sign of what direction federal homelessness programs might take?
Well, I think we're all holding our breath right now, because what has been talked about, there was a Politico article, Politico being a politically oriented magazine, that indicated that the administration was thinking of taking $2 billion of $3 billion, that's with the B, $2 of $3 billion away from the housing focus priority and putting it into the service priority, which would be very detrimental to the efforts to move forward in our country to actually end people's homelessness. So that's looming over us. And again, only the shutdown has kept us from understanding more fully and given us actually an opportunity to push back on that. But certainly cuts, I mean, we're seeing these draconian cuts being made to people's food and other aspects of their lives. So that will only mean that more people will fall into homelessness. We know, for example, for elderly people all around our country, elderly people are having to, as their rents go up, they're having to make very difficult choices, and some of them are falling into homelessness as well. I'm wondering, I assume that's a Cape phenomenon as well, that we're seeing more elderly people falling into homelessness. I would think so.
Terry, are you seeing more elderly people looking for services?
Oh, absolutely. And we're encouraging them to do that as well, because, you know, if you want to get into senior housing, you know, there's a 5-year wait or all of that. So I think it's important that folks are looking at things before they become dire. But then, in addition to, you know, increased property taxes and just cost of living, there are a lot of folks who are in these larger houses that have been on the Cape forever, and they're suddenly not being able to afford them.
Yeah, dang. And also, too, you were seeing that at a lot of the food pantries. And it's really difficult for some seniors in particular who think, oh, you know what, give it to the younger families. They need it more than I do. But we've had the food pantries on here many times saying, no, come to the food pantry. They have enough for everybody to take part, right? Just have a couple of minutes left. I wonder if one of you would like to chime in. If you had the ear of the HUD secretary or the Health and Human Service Secretary, Tim, what would you say? What would you want them to know?
If I had the ear of them, I would say that the Housing First strategy works. We've implemented it over the years. It has done amazing things. I've seen some amazing stories. Some people shake homelessness from, you know, years of being outside. It works, and we have all the data to support that. And I really, really do hope that that's a policy that we, you know, just continue to move forward with.
Yeah. Laura, what would you say? Same thing?
Well, Tim's correct. We see it firsthand with the Housing First. It works here at the shelter. We have 6 people last month. We've been averaging about 6 a month. And it works because of how we operate here on the Cape and with the partnerships that we built.
Yeah. Terry?
I would take it in one different direction specific to HPC, and that is please renew the funding for the Youth Homelessness Demonstration Program, because we need these services for the young people living on the Cape.
Yeah, something we hadn't talked about. There's an increase there as well. All right, Philip Mangano, President and CEO of the American Roundtable to Abolish Homelessness. Laura Russo's Director of Shelter Services for Catholic Charities that runs St. Joseph's Shelter in Hyannis. Terry Behrens, Program Officer of the Homeless Prevention Council. Tim Reagan's Assistant Director of Individual Homeless Services at Housing Assistance Corporation. We'll post links with more information about each of these organizations at our website, capeandislands.org. Thank you all for the important work that you do and for being with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mindy, for always focusing on this issue. We appreciate it.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.